You're listening to DraftKings Network.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This is the Dan Le Batard Show with the Stugatz Podcast.
Ron McGill will be here shortly. It's been a minute since we've seen him. He's always being dragged to some sort of animal surgery. There's always news at the zoo, photographs to be taken. And I remind you again that Ron McGill, who is an award-winning photographer, wildlife photographer, he will be among the artists displaying their work at Moss Miami. And if you want tickets, mosslebatard.com is where you go. There will be a number of artists, a number of things auctioned, and we're giving a whole lot of money to charity because these things are not intended to make money. It's to throw a party. It's to give back, and it's to enjoy ourselves. So Ron McGill will be here in moments. But Deion Sanders, Stugatz, has now said... He told us, I think it was during the Super Bowl, that he had gotten offers from schools in Division I, and now he's put a name on the offer, and it's Colorado football offered him a job. Why are you laughing at that?
Just Deion in Colorado, that's all. It's just, I don't know. It's like a fish out of water, it seems like, a little bit. I don't know. It's Colorado. It's Deion Sanders. I've been to Colorado. It just seems like an odd school. Like, it's not the school that I would think that would, you know, make an offer to Deion Sanders to be their head coach. I didn't have Colorado in the mix. I had Florida State. I had Auburn. I had SEC schools. I had schools in Florida. Never in my wildest dreams did I think Boulder, Colorado. That's all.
Colorado is exactly the kind of program that should be doing something like that.
I don't disagree. It'd be a great hire. Any school that hires Deion Sanders is going to win. They're going to have a good coach. They're going to attract kids because Deion is still relevant. He has kept himself relevant, and he has proven to be a good recruiter and a good coach. So I think it'd be a smart hire for just about any school in America.
This is what Deion said to the Colorado job offer. Because Deion, Jeff Saturday loses last night, goes to bed with his timeouts. Still has those timeouts this morning.
Yeah.
It's one of the rare controls that a coach can actually exert over all the weirdness that happens in a game. I can stop time three times a half. I can stop time and we could go and talk about things. And the only thing that Jeff Saturday basically has to do at this point is call timeout correctly. You can hide almost everything else, right? Like everything else, he's hidden well. He started on the job and he's just like, okay, we think he's doing okay. They won one. They almost won another one. But you got to get the time management right. It still eludes Nathaniel Hackett. But Deion Sanders was told before Jeff Saturday, years before Jeff Saturday got that job, no, it's ridiculous for you to have that job. Hall of Famer Deion Sanders, who also played with many Hall of Famers and was a better football player by leaps and bounds than Jeff Saturday. Deion Sanders was told, no, you have to start at Jackson State. You primetime, you say fish out of water. Colorado would be deemed more worthy of as a Division I program would be deemed a better job than having to start at Jackson State and make Jackson State matter nationally with insurance commercials the way that Deion Sanders has. Deion Sanders has done more for Jackson State than Jackson State has done for Deion Sanders.
Oh, no doubt about it.
Well, we'll see what kind of job. Because while you're comparison shopping, let's not make it seem like Deion didn't cut a line, too, by going from his high school that was surrounded in some controversy because of recruiting strategies that they had in high school to become a head coach without ever having to be on another staff. He also cut a line to have a head football coach job. It was just in a lower division.
But let's talk about this for a second, because I believe that resume, that particular resume, because you're going to a school that's not Division I, the line cutting is vastly less egregious than going to the top of the profession and a Colts job.
I understood, but I granted it's not FBS, but he wasn't a grad assistant and working his way up. He wasn't a coordinator. He wasn't even recruiting for another school. It was the first. He just went straight to the top of the food chain below FBS.
But Mike, there's a big difference. You would acknowledge, right?
I understand.
Like Jackson State and your first job being the Colts.
I'm just saying we should put voice to. He also skipped the line.
The reason I'm stopping you on skipping the line is just because the way that I consider these things. If you're of that level of greatness as a player and fame, you're doing more by going to that school for that school than you're doing for yourself. Tim Duncan was willing to be an assistant coach, but usually the people who are Hall of Famers don't have to intern. People who are that great at something don't have to start with at the bottom rung of a ladder as an assistant coach somewhere. And so Jeff Saturday goes to the front of the line, and all I wanted to read to you was the Deion Sanders quote on why he didn't take the Colorado job, because not surprisingly, Deion Sanders has a great deal of self-respect. To someone else who hasn't been that dude, it's intoxicating. I've been prime for a long time, dog. Attention ain't nothing new to me. Like, come on, I'm not being braggadocious. That's a wonderful word, isn't it? I just came up with that. But this isn't new to me. Being in the spotlight is not new to me. So he was not flattered by a Colorado offer. I don't know if he was insulted by it, but he turned it down.
He has other offers coming, Dan. He knows that. He has to. I mean, that's why I was kind of like, it sounds crazy, but I think that Deion should be at one of these bigger schools and not at Colorado, who's one of the worst college football programs in America. It's insulting to Deion Sanders.
Did he come up with braggadocious?
He did now.
I think that's a word.
It's his word.
That's an actual word, though.
But it's definitely a word.
Braggadocio is a word, and I suspect that if you're exhibiting braggadocio, you are braggadocious. But if he is not... It is a wonderful world for, a word for him. Stu Gatz, I've told you before that his last game at FSU, he showed up in a limousine wearing a top hat and a tuxedo and a 0.0 grade point average because he wasn't going to any classes. He was a pro. And
class was football, Dan.
Man, he was one of the first. Really, he really was. I'm trying to think of who would have been before him on guy who realized that he was a brand in the 80s as a college football player, realized that the system wasn't built for him and that he was just going to be big and brash enough to be bigger than the entirety of the system. But the Auburn job has gone to Hugh Freeze, which I don't believe we talked about enough yesterday. Mike, I thought for sure that Hugh Freeze getting back in the game at Auburn, as all of this shit becomes the maximum mercenary shit, and someone's going to hire Urban Meyer, because now it doesn't matter anymore. It really doesn't matter what your scandal du jour is. We're going to give money to the coach who might be able to fix it to get us in the game for SEC money for big television dollars. And we don't care that... I know Hugh Freeze left a lot of scandal in his wake. I know that Mississippi all of a sudden got good at football. All the Mississippi, everything in the state of Mississippi got good at football as soon as it was obvious to everybody that they were paying a lot. And then Hugh Freeze goes to being a guy who coaches a game in a hospital bed in the press box while his team is shut out with Malik Willis as the quarterback. Was Malik Willis the quarterback of the team that got shut out as he coached the team from a hospital bed in the press box because it was so important that Hugh Freeze be there that day for Liberty University? I also encourage all of you to see, God forbid, the documentary about Liberty and Jerry Falwell Jr. and everything that was going on at Liberty. It is the most popular documentary in the history of Hulu.
I have a question, though, as it relates specifically Hugh Freeze. Yeah, there were some text messages that revealed some things about him, but What was his,
some calls to escort services that he claimed to have just misdialed.
Right, but
several
you know,
times
it happens.
Right. So, but like, what is
put it on the poll, Guillermo, at Levitard Show? Have you ever accidentally called the escort service
multiple times?
But what is the scandal? Like, so he like got Robert Kimdichie when no one was expecting Ole Miss to recruit that well. Isn't that like part of the job now? Is to get players a lot of money and be good of that? Like, why is like Hugh Freeze needed sort of his reputation reclaimed when the money was still under the table?
He got fired because, well, it's difficult to do wins loss with him because he was stripped of all the wins.
But for reasons,
39-25.
Yes.
But for reasons that would make you a good college football coach now. Your job is to get high-level recruits a lot of money.
Last year, he was
clearly very good at that.
Last year, in the beginning of this season, Liberty was very good. Obviously, they had a pro quarterback last year, but something very bizarre happened in a Liberty season. I don't know if Hugh Freeze just kind of checked out because he was eyeing other jobs, but they ended the season on a fart, losing to Virginia Tech. They got blown out by New Mexico State. The very confusing season. I'm gambling again.
Ron McGill is with us now. We have an assortment of animal questions, as we always do. He is wearing his maximum zoo animal. He looks like he is safari. You are authentic right now. You're wearing your zoo garb. And on Twitter, you wrote last week, "We missed you. Today I had to say goodbye to arguably the most iconic, magnificent animal that has ever lived at Zoo Miami. I've known and admired him my entire 40 plus years at the zoo and will miss him profoundly. This really hurts." Tell us, Ron, he was 56 years old. His name, was it Dallop? How did he get his name? What is the story of this bull elephant?
His name is Dollop, and he came here as a one-year-old calf in 1967. He was a gift from a big benefactor of the zoo back then, a gentleman named Ralph Scott, who brought him and another female over named Seton, and they both came over together. And he was one of the first animals I got to meet when I started working at the old Crandon Park Zoo in Key Biscayne. He was the last mammal here at Zoo Miami that originally lived on Key Biscayne. And at 56, he was the oldest male elephant in the country, either African or Asian. He was, I know I'm biased, but I can tell you if you looked at him, he was the most magnificent Asian elephant you've ever seen. His tusks reached all the way to the ground. We had to trim them on occasion because they would hit the ground and he couldn't lower his head properly. I was lucky to see the calf that he sired was actually born while I was working as a night keeper. It was born during the evening. I was there with Bill Doss, who was his keeper, his original keeper. And to see the birth of that elephant was an amazing thing for me. You know, listen, he was 56 years old. He had an incredible life. He's the longest living, you know, male elephant in the country at the time. But still, he was kind of a fixture of my career here. You know, there's one other animal, the tortoise, the Goliath, and a chimp named Samantha, who've been here for most of my career. Those kind of like the last two animals now. And I guess it was very difficult for me because it just kind of reasserts the passing of time. You know, when things that have been constants in your life all of a sudden start disappearing. Listen, he had a great life. You celebrate his life, but still there's a huge void there now. It's just a reminder that time goes by.
Ron, I don't ask this to mock you. I've seen your relationship with the animals. I've been to the zoo with you. You have real relationships with these animals. Did you cry?
You know, I cried. I never worked directly with Dollop. I never, you know, cleaned his poop or hosed out his barn, but I had interactions with him. And again, you know, when I did a lot of stuff with the media and things, I would work with Dollop and he'd be there. And I cried, and I cried for a lot of things. First of all, because of the magnificence of this elephant, but when we knew that we were going to have to euthanize him, he had no more to give. I mean, we went in there with huge forklift crane type heavy equipment to lift him up, and he had no more to give, and he just looked at us. You could see in his eyes that he was just tired. And when we made that decision, you know, all the people that had worked with him, people even came in who had their day off, came in when we knew, and he just was there in a sternal position, tired, but everybody said goodbye. Everybody kind of, I tell you, it was a very emotional time to see this elephant surrounded by all the people who loved him, kind of saying goodbye. But he left with the dignity and the respect, and most importantly, the peace that he deserved. So it was a very emotional moment. I, you know, this anytime we lose an animal, it's sad. But this animal was just so iconic, so magnificent, so intelligent. It was really a part of the family.
When everyone gathers like that to mourn an animal and you're making the decision on euthanizing an animal, how much is pain taken into account, suffering taken into account? How much pain was Dollop in? When you said nothing left to give, could you tell that he was unhappy?
Yes, you can tell he was tired. I don't want to use the word unhappy. He was exhausted. He could not get up. You're talking about an animal that in his prime was close to 14,000 pounds. He had lost a significant amount of weight over the last several months. Again, all things associated with, you know, aging, excessive aging in an animal. But he was tired. And, you know, one of the things we promise the animals here is that you're always going to have that dignity and respect and the peace. We don't want an animal to suffer just because we don't want to suffer. So it was something that we knew, he knew, and it was one of the most peaceful transitions I've ever seen. He simply just kind of closed his eyes and just stopped breathing. There was no flinching. There was nothing like that at all. I took photographs of some of the people saying goodbye, but I'm not posting any of those. I'm not showing you. It was just a personal, private moment for those people. I wanted to provide them with those images, which they're very thankful for. But, you know, those are not things. And I know we do this all the time when an animal dies. We do show things, we show the images, but this was just something exceptional. This was something that is just personal for the people who were with that animal, said goodbye. And it was what it should have been. It was dignified, respectful, and peaceful.
When you say that you trim his tusk, how does that go? He has to be sedated, yes?
No, that's the thing. You know, they had such a relationship with him. It seemed like he kind of knew we were helping him. So he would present his tusk through a protected barrier, and we would take a special kind of saw and go through the end. You know, we made sure we had a dentist there because the tusk is a living tooth. The excess part of the tusk is just pure ivory, but the nerve goes to a certain point in the tusk, and you need to make sure you don't get to that nerve. So that's what they did. They would trim the end of the tusk with him, and he would voluntarily let us do that as if he knew we were helping him out. These are the kinds of relationships that, you know, as time goes by, you start thinking all the things that you did together. You know, I was there when we trimmed his tusk. I photographed that whole procedure. I looked at him. I photographed his eyes, you know, as he was getting that done. And I mean, I might sound really over emotional with this thing, but you can look at an animal's eyes and sometimes feel what it is thinking. And I could see in his eyes that, you know, he knew we were helping him out.
Hey, Ron, it's Billy. So you touched on Rita a little while ago. Thoughts and prayers to Rita from Ron and Rita the Eagles. In this crazy time of Twitter, you can follow Ron at Twitter at Ron McGill. One of the wildest tweets that I've seen was from you on October 28th in the evening. And the tweet read, "Ron and Rita are feeling a bit frisky this evening, .. I'm sure that they wouldn't be happy if they knew I was posting this, as they are very private. But I thought it might help inspire my friends to have a, quote, wild weekend, # doing the wild thing." And then you put out a video of two eagles having sex. Yeah. Why did you do that?
Billy, I did that to connect people with animals. You know, I think if people saw that, even in our most intimate moments, animals are very similar to us, that they would have a greater appreciation for. You know, I know I've said this before, I don't want to sound like a broken record, but, you know, in the end, we protect what we love what we understand, and we understand what we're taught. And I wanted to kind of put a little anthropomorphic spin on the fact that eagles like to have sex too.
Yeah, but, you acknowledge they wouldn't like it. You're like an animal voyeur.
Yes, Billy, is that what you want to hear? I'm an animal voyeur.
Finally, he admits it. I mean, you did distribute animal porn.
Yeah.
I mean,
way to keep pressing, Bill.
You did. Yep. Way to go, Billy. You finally got him.
There you go, Billy.
Trapped him.
I love it. I love just showing animal porn. It's just a weird, kinky side of me.
Incidentally.
You know what? Let me, I'm going to tell you guys something. And don't anybody else ask me for this. My last cameo request from a great Levitard fan was for a husband for his wife's 49th birthday. And he said, please, but the most important thing, she has never received I'm not going to say what he quoted it as, a photograph of male genitalia. Can you please send her a photograph of an animal male genitalia? Again, he used another term, a common term used when you're exchanging those photographs. And you know what? I did. Yeah. I sent her a photograph of a fully erect rhino penis, and I got this incredible wonderful review on Cameo by this guy saying I'm the greatest thing since sliced bread and how happy his wife was. And this is what this has come to on this show.
People
this
know what it, people
that's
know.
A heck of a cameo. I got
to
be honest.
That's a photo album I want to look through right there.
People know to come
give
to
the rhino a cut
for the animal porn. And Ron, if they want more of it, you're going to be doing it at Moss Miami. You're going to do.
There you go. Moss Miami is going to be showing, I mean, the hardcore stuff, stuff that I haven't even shown before, stuff that I'm. It makes me quiver at the thought that I'm going to do this because it's so unlike the image that I try to project of myself. It is going to ruin me probably socially for the rest of my life.
It's sex and the animals, and it's an educational talk. It is science.
Yeah, except you're going to have those weirdos, you know, hiding behind a tree looking kind of weird.
Well, that's you, it sounds like. How quickly did you find that rhino picture? Like, you have an album on your phone? You're like, oh, let me scroll through the old Rolodex and send the right one, or...
Actually, I do have an album of a wide variety of vulvas, vaginas, penises, all kinds of things, because it's part of my work as a researcher.
I do that too with my Ron. I do that too with my wife. Anytime I'm looking at my phone, I'm working.
Aren't you more of like a PR person? Like, do you really need to have animal porn on your phone?
Oh, Lord have mercy. Well, thanks for bringing a smile on my face, guys. I needed it.
Tony, what do you got for Ron McGill?
Ron, why is it that our dogs can't notice us on FaceTime?
They can. I've had dogs notice people on FaceTime. Time with dogs. And your dog just might not care about you that much.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
I didn't think of it that way.
Wow.
Or does Tony have a dumb dog?
Wow. No, Gorda's very smart. Gorda's very smart. The problem is she just doesn't care about me.
Gorda.
Yeah, that's my dog's
name. I'll tell you what, Tony, put it on the television. You know, just when you do it, put it on the television and have a look at the top. Maybe the screen's too small. When you see it on the television, because I've seen that's where dogs really get the reaction. They look and they go, hey, and then they get their tails all wagging and they want to go and jump on you on the TV. So try that.
I have heard that dogs don't recognize images on television screens because it just looks like a flickering image to them. And so if they're not recognizing a FaceTime, which is also a screen, it might be the same time. And I Googled it. Dogs can't resolve flickers at, I think that's 75 hertz. A TV screen probably appears to be rapidly flickering to dogs. And that's probably why your dog isn't responding to the image on the phone. I'm an animal expert now.
Dogs can't understand humans either. They just do noises.
Really?
You could tell your dog the shit and it'll sit.
But Ron is saying that your dog will recognize you on television.
It will. If you go on YouTube, you see dogs watching screens with things going on, and you see the dogs want to go jump at those things, so they can see the screen.
Ron, why don't animals shit?
Why don't animals
wear glasses?
Ron, that was just terrible timing by Chris Cody. He was instructing his dog to shit, so people could hear how much it sounds like sit, and he did so at the exact time that Billy was asking a question.
Yeah, why don't animals wear glasses? Like my optometrist, when you go in, there's a machine that pretty much calibrates it almost to exactly the right prescription, and then they do the one tooth situation. Why can't you do that with animals?
Well, animals don't have the patience or understanding to keep glasses on their face. Now, you know, if they could, they would. But they do cataract surgery. They can do like a cataract surgery and perhaps even a LASIK surgery on animals. But you know, animals don't understand these things that you wear because they try to take them off. Animals like to be naked.
Ron, can you put it on the poll at Lebatard Show, Billy? Do animals like to be naked? And is Ron McGill the world's greatest supplier of animal porn? Can you tell us, when looking into a mirror, what animals are capable of recognizing themselves?
Sure. Chimpanzees, elephants, dolphins. Generally speaking, it's the more intelligent animals. Dogs, generally speaking, do not. You can go through a plethora of videos on YouTube. You know, there's one really hilarious one of a bear looking at himself in a mirror and he goes freaking nuts. And he just goes nuts. It's hilarious.
It is great. I mean, it sucks for the bear because it thinks it's meeting it. It's like just walking in the woods. Like, oh, what a nice day. This is.
Holy shit, there's another bear.
And then it's gone. And then he can't find the bear. And then he's just freaking out. That thing needs therapy after that, for sure.
Every time he comes back and stares into the mirror.
The whole internet's just like, nah, this dumb bear.
Hey, bear.
Hey, bear.
The elephant recognized itself?
Yes, elephants recognize themselves. So do chimps and dolphins. Those are the three that I know of for sure.
Ron, for those who do not know, you are an award-winning photographer. You will be exhibiting art photographs at Moss Miami. What is that over your right shoulder? What is the painting? Is a painting or photograph on the wall?
That's a painting of a lioness charging that was given to me by Anne Van Dyke, who passed away a couple of years ago, but she was to cheetahs what Jane Goodall is to chimps. She was considered one of the greatest cheetah experts in the world. I studied with her in South Africa. She's the one who taught me how to work around cheetahs, how to be with cheetahs. And she gave me that as a gift, and I treasure it. So that's why I have it in the back of my
office. Can you take us on a little bit of a tour on what it is that's behind you there? Just tell us what things are and what the story is behind some of the things that are in your office.
I'm not sure what you can see, but you have these skulls here. There's a skull from an oryx here. There's a skull from a greater kudu here. I have here, this is cool. This is a spear given to me by a Maasai warrior in Kenya.
Wow.
So it's kind of a nice handmade spear that I have. I have lots of photographs of people that I've had the pleasure of meeting. I've got I've got feathers from all different kinds of birds. I've got some stupid awards. I got some bird's nests. I got some carvings, a lot of sculptures. I've got, I got my distinguished alumnus, Gator.
Do you have, put that away, please. Feel free to never show us that again. Is there anything there that has more emotional value to you than anything else?
Well, actually, yes. Let me show you something real quickly here.
I was so hoping when he stood up, he wasn't going to be wearing pants.
Oh, gosh.
The way you were also hoping he would throw that spear for some reason.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
This is a carving made out of a solid piece of lead wood by an indigenous chief in Panama that was given to me when I was able to create the Harpy Eagle Project in Panama. And, you know, they gave me the key to the city. They gave me all kinds of fancy, beautiful framed things, gold carvings and stuff. But this one meant the most to me. And he came up to me afterwards, was wrapped in a towel. He was all dressed up in his indigenous garb. And he said, I'm sorry, I can't give you these, you know, fancy framed things and gold things, but I carved this for you to say thank you. And this is something that to me, look at the talons, look at the detail and the talons. This is a solid block of wood. And he carved his name under there. Look at the details in the feathers. I mean, it's unbelievable that to me, an indigenous person who for me is one of the most important people I can meet and taught me about these eagles in the forest, carved me this thing. So this is very personal to me.
The spear is cooler.
Yeah.
I'm going to say it.
Yeah, that's because Cody wants to use it to get under a giraffe, right?
This guy gets it. Yeah.
That would work, though. That would kill a giraffe, would it not? The spear would if he would.
Did you steal a bird's nest? Is that what you said? Like you took a bird, you displaced a bird family?
No, it fell out of a tree. Mm. It fell out of a tree. It's called an arapendula nest. It's a huge, like it's a dangling nest. It's a very weird nest that they make to avoid, to prevent snakes from getting into it and stealing the eggs. So it fell out of a tree and I just put it up in my office here. I sprayed it with hairspray to preserve it, which is perfect because it's been there now for like 10 years and it hasn't degraded one bit, but that's the trick in preserving a bird's nest.
Real quick, before you get out of here, because you do so much good work with and through your endowment, the Harpy Eagle Project that you spoke of, what are the details there? What is the story behind that?
The Harpy Eagle was always my favorite animal since I was a little kid. I'd never seen a live one. I saw the first one in the Museum of Natural History, but the first live ones I saw in Panama, they were in a horrible little cage. To make a long story short, I said, we got to build a better thing for these eagles. They said, we have no money. I met with the mayor of Panama City. I got contacted by the president of Panama and I raised over $1 million. We built the Center for the Harpy Eagle. And on April 10th, 2002, I got in front of the Panamanian Congress and was there when they signed a law officially declaring the Harpy Eagle the national bird of Panama. Now it is an iconic animal like the bald eagle is to us. It's throughout Panama. And it's the conservation project I'm most proud of in my career. So it's kind of like, that's my symbol, my spirit animal.
Again, if you want to contribute to the things that Ron is doing, there is no bureaucracy between where your money goes. You give the money and Ron McGill gets it to places that don't waste it and do help the animal kingdom because he genuinely helps the animal kingdom. Thank you, Ron. Good talking to you as always, sir. Good catching up.
Thank you, guys. Take care.
Thank you, Ron.
Again, you can see him and this presentation he speaks of that isn't animal porny. It's actually educational, but it's also funny. December 10th, mosslebitard.com is where the tickets are.
Hey everybody, it's Mike, and typically I record these Miller Lite spots in the studio, but I requested that I specifically record this one from my home office because I got a window, and I'm looking outside at those beautiful fishtail palms, knowing that in just a few seconds, I'm going to go out there, I'm going to crack open a can of Miller Lite, because while sitting outside by my fishtail palms is usually a good time, I like to take it up a notch and make it a Miller time. That's right, you crack that puppy open, and you don't have to think about what you're drinking for a darn second. A lot has changed over the years, including my backyard. Lots of landscaping being done right now. But the one thing that hasn't changed is the undebatable quality of Miller Lite. You don't have to choose what quality is the best. Miller Lite has great taste, and it's less filling. Tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/Dan, or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories per 12 ounces. Fewer calories and carbs than premium regular beer.
Don Lebatard.
He said while you were off there, while the connection was bad, he had mentioned that you have lost a lot of weight and that he admires that. What got into you? Why did you decide? I thought it was all, I thought we enjoyed being about the munchies. Oh, it's slurring again. Okay, the connection is bad again, unfortunately.
Back to Magnus.
Okay, back to Magnus for Magnus. And this is going about as well as it could go. Thank you, Billy, again for laughing in my face.
Stugatz.
Magnus. Mean, I am, which is the worst. Can you guys hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
Hello?
Yes, sir, Action.
Hello?
Action.
Man, I'm really sorry. This is literally the worst way to ever do this. This is burning my heart that this is happening. But if you could hear me, just understand, I'm sorry.
This is the Dan Lebatard Show with the Stugatz.
We are presented by DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app today and use code Dan for a special offer when you sign up. That's code Dan, only at DraftKings Sportsbook.
Were any of you soothed on Sunday, even though there was a whole lot of sports going on, the reminder that DeSean Jackson can still get behind a secondary?
When's that going to stop?
It soothed you? Because I always knew that he could do it. And he'll be able to do it for the remainder of time.
Well,
I
but mean, he hasn't done it in several years.
I know. But, you know, you put him into an NFL game, and that's what DeSean Jackson does. I mean, he goes deep, and someone gets him the ball.
I'm pretty sure we can say, jumping off the conversation that we had yesterday about how shitty we generally are, especially now, when so much of the commentary around sports is, you suck, you're not as good as Mahomes. Like, that's the analysis. You're not great. You're not as good as Michael Jordan. That's all we did to LeBron the entire career. Like, you're pretty great, but not that great. Mm-hmm. You're not the greatest. DeSean Jackson, statistically, is the greatest deep threat ever, correct?
Hmm.
Yeah, I think in terms of longevity, people are going to – I'm going to go Moss there, but I think in terms of –
I think it's Moss, Mike. I think you're
catches
right.
Catches over a certain yardage. No, that's DeSean Jackson is the all-time
DeSean
leader.
DeSean Jackson has more giant touchdowns behind a secondary than Moss does.
Yeah, it's why I believe DeSean Jackson's a Hall of Famer.
But that doesn't necessarily make him better than Moss. Moss's career was shorter.
Tyreek Hill's going to get in that conversation, too.
I mean, DeSean Jackson is a classic home run hitter. You know, we discussed this. You know, it's
he's
right.
He's Hall of Famer. I think he is.
Will Fuller V. I mean, we have some of these guys. I think Randy Moss is probably considered. I'm not saying you're wrong with Jackson and the averages. I think Moss is probably considered the most dangerous deep threat in the history of the NFL. I mean, he had three catches for 200 and something yards on Thanksgiving Day and three touchdowns.
We had that conversation yesterday about one's peak versus the longevity of someone else being really good at it. And tomato, tomato.
Well, but it's not tomato, tomato, because I believe the best of Justin Jefferson is the best of anything we've ever seen at that position. I don't actually need the stats to back me up on that. I thought the same thing when Moss arrived. The conversation at wide receiver is threefold, and it's only threefold. And honestly, everyone says it's Jerry Rice as the best receiver ever. I can make my arguments for Randy Moss and Terrell Owens, but they would not be statistical arguments. I can't make a statistical argument against Jerry Rice.
So DeSean Jackson holds two records, most touchdowns over 60 yards. He did that 26 times.
Wow.
That's phenomenal. I'm going to say that again. This was as of last year, by the way, because he also signed late because he can still scoot. 26 times he had a touchdown over 60 yards. He also holds the NFL record for touchdowns over 80 yards with 5.
Some of those are special teams touchdowns.
No, I think this is passing.
That's just receiving touchdowns?
Yeah, because otherwise Devin Hester and Cordarrelle Patterson would be among the leaders.
He might be the best receiver Lamar Jackson's ever had.
Mike, they would not be, because Cordarrelle Patterson has 9 kickoff returns.
Right, which would all be, I mean, they would all be over 80 yards.
Yes, the giant plays. Everyone wants those in the sport. It is valuable to everyone. And I, in watching Lamar Jackson connect with DeSean Jackson on that play, it was not lost at me in what lost on me on what was otherwise a pretty ridiculous game, and in many instances a sloppy game. That was a beautiful play. Beautiful, to summon Andrew Luck. The Lamar Jackson being able to throw that ball that far to get DeSean Jackson in stride when he hasn't run that route in 3 years.
Pretty amazing. He averages 17.6 yards per reception. That's top 40 in NFL history. I'm not saying you're wrong. I'm just saying I feel like there are other deep threats out there. I mean, Willie Gault, James Lofton. James Lofton was great. Great.
But not as great as DeSean Jackson. James Lofton had more yards on average, but I'm talking about guys that you have seen.
I mean, Bob Hayes averaged 20 yards per reception. The Bullet. I mean, Bullet Bob Hayes. Dan, I'm telling you, you forget about some of these guys when we were growing up. That was when Greg was growing up, Bullet Bob
Bullet
Hayes.
Bullet Bob Hayes is not when I was growing up. Chris Cody, how afraid are you of a Bosa breaking through your offensive line?
I thought you were going to say breaking Tua.
That is injured. An offensive line that is injured. I don't know how many people listening to this remember Bosa's father, John. He was a bust with the Miami Dolphins. He was a first-round pick. His father, I believe he's now a strip club empresario, is he not?
I think that was the case several years ago. He was a former guest on the fake pregame show.
Did he sell? Huh. He sold his strip clubs? He no longer...
Mr. Bosa?
He's no longer... John Bosa, a Dolphin bust, is no longer in the strip club industry, but his sons are wreaking havoc on the NFL, and you're scared, correct, Chris Cody? You're scared of Bosa getting near your quarterback when your offensive line is injured. Have you gotten any updates on Armstead's condition?
Well, spoiler alert, I don't think he's going to be practicing.
I believe he's out like 2 to 4 weeks. I think that McDaniel said that it could be a short-term thing. It's not like for the rest of the season. But yes, I'm a little scared, but I'm excited for these next 3 games. Because, like, you know, everyone's been talking about the Dolphins' light schedule. I'm ready for them to just show, because this is what, you go 2-1 in this 3-game stretch, now teams are really talking about the Dolphins.
I think this is the second most excited I've been for a regular season game this year. Behind Mahomes versus Brady entering that Sunday night.
Yeah.
This is a massive, massive
This is
game
more exciting for you
see.
Than Chiefs and Bills.
Yeah, this is huge because
it's
we're
McDaniel
later in the season.
Versus Shanahan,
yeah, I wanna see how this game plays out from the chess mat.
Is this a measuring stick game for the Dolphins?
Yeah, they,
I mean,
previous incarnations of this team have gone to Levi's Stadium.
Let's call it a measuring 3 games. Measuring stick 3 games for the Dolphins. If they go 0-3 in this 3-game stretch, then you can be like, okay, maybe they're a little bit of a fluke. You go 2-1 in this stretch right here, everybody's respecting the Dolphins.
But I'm with Mike. I'm super excited. Sorry, Bill. I'm super excited because of the coaching matchup, because they're traveling cross country, because a lot of people still question and doubt the Dolphins, and a lot of people feel like the San Francisco 49ers are the most talented team roster top to bottom, and they might be right. But this is a great opportunity for the Dolphins to shut everyone up. Just shut them all up.
Let's call this stretch what it is, a measuring trident. This is the first prong on the measuring trident.
Yeah.
So you have the 49ers, the Chargers, and then you have the Bills, who they've already beat, but they'll be part of the trident for this one.
I'm glad that they've largely dominated their last 5 games, but their last 5 wins are against the Steelers, the Lions, the Bears, the Browns, and the Texans.
I said that. I prefaced
Shush
that.
You.
Right. No, I'm glad that they were up 30-0 at halftime. I'm glad that the Browns game was
they
a
handled
fairly
their business.
Easy win. The Lions game after they went down 14-7 or 14-0 was a fairly straightforward game as well. But this is December road trips to difficult opponents away from home across the country.
And what did the Bills do against the Lions?
They beat them won by 3 points. Three.
Yeah, but it was an embarrassing performance.
It was.
The Dolphins won by 4 points.
The Dolphins barely beat them as well.
No, the numbers were vastly different. Yeah, you can't even compare Tua to Josh Allen. Up. Look them up.
Mm-hmm. The Dolphins were down 14-0 to the Lions in that game.
So what? You taste a little blood in your mouth and you go and dominate. That's what
well, how
did.
Confident are you? Let's. I'd actually like to explore this because we were able.
They went on a 31-13 run to Billy's point.
I'm never confident is what he just muttered under his breath. And it wasn't about the Dolphins. It was
in general.
Just, yeah, it was life, just life. Principle. Yes. But we somehow. And this is not usually easy to do in football. But we said before the season started, their first four games are hard. You should be thrilled that they went 3-1 in their first four, and their next eight are easy. We said this season would go this way, the way that it's gone, and I don't like them going to San Francisco because San Francisco just generally scares me. Everything they do scares me. When they've been healthy the last 2 years, I know they've somehow put up like a 4-12 season in there somewhere, but when they're healthy, I'm terrified of the 49ers. They're the team that almost beat the Chiefs in the Super Bowl.
And they can kind of be slow starters at times. This is usually around the time where the Niners start rounding into form where everyone points to them and says, is Jimmy Garoppolo going to go to another Super Bowl?
Mm-hmm. There's one clear advantage the Dolphins have, and Mike just mentioned it. Quarterback. That's the difference. Jimmy's
been playing really well. But they don't you know what they
Jimmy's
don't?
Jimmy's having quietly, I think, you can make an argument, this is his best season there.
He's having a really good season.
I think what Chris Cody ignores is that they've got the skill guys that excite them just as much as your skill guys excite you outside of quarterback. Because McCaffrey, now it's not even Debo Samuel that they're using all the time. They're using the usage rate of McCaffrey is more than anybody else's on the team. He's the one who's getting the most use.
Plus they have George Kittle. Plus they have Ayuk. They have a really good
team. Deep running back room, too.
I mean, I will say Elijah Mitchell did have another injury. He's got an MCL that's going to have him out 6 to 8 weeks. And Tony was telling me that McCaffrey's got a little bit of a knee injury as well.
He always has.
He always does. Yeah.
Sounds like you're starting with the excuses to already discredit the Dolphins should they win.
No, this is a great win. They're 4-point underdogs going into this game. If they win in San Francisco, if they win in Los Angeles, if they win in Buffalo, those are impressive results.
I love watching the Niners play defense too. They have so many tremendous players.
Fred Warner is a beast.
Warner's incredible.
Their defensive line, when healthy, if not Philadelphia, it's the best in the league, is it not? Like just statistically, their D line. You cannot run against them. Their scoring numbers, all of the numbers when San Francisco is healthy, is that's an overwhelming defense.
Garoppolo has 16 touchdowns, 4 interceptions. I can only tell you what Chris Sims tells me and Billy every single week. And trust me, he's studying the film a lot more than we are.
That's not saying much.
He's stubborn. He doesn't want to be wrong.
No, top to bottom, he has said since week one that the 49ers are the most talented team in the NFL if they're healthy.
But he also has a Kyle Shanahan tattoo.
Yeah,
so.
Exactly.
Bit biased there.
Hey, everybody, it's Mike, and typically I record these Miller Lite spots in the studio, but I requested that I specifically record this one from my home office because I got a window, and I'm looking outside at those beautiful fishtail palms, knowing that in just a few seconds, I'm going to go out there, I'm going to crack open a can of Miller Lite, because while sitting outside by my fishtail palms is usually a good time, I like to take it up a notch and make it a Miller time. That's right, you crack that puppy open, and you don't have to think about what you're drinking for a darn second. A lot has changed over the years, including my backyard. Lots of landscaping being done right now. But the one thing that hasn't changed is the undebatable quality of Miller Lite. You don't have to choose what quality is the best. Miller Lite has great taste, and it's less filling. Tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/Dan, or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories per 12 ounces, fewer calories and carbs than premium regular beer.